Hi, this is Mike McNamara, and you're listening to All Marine Radio on your home for it, the one and only All Warrior Radio Network.
What you're going to hear next is you hear all these different interviews, and they all say they're one of the first, but excuse me. This is a Navy lieutenant commander who was in charge of photographers on Iwo Jima, and he's one of the first guys to get back to Washington, D.C., and to go sit in somebody's studio. So this report is, I want to say it runs about 5 minutes. So here's one of the first live voices that Americans heard that had come back from Iwo Jima after they had seen the fighting.
We are delaying the start of our scheduled program to bring you a special CBS World News broadcast. For an interview with an eyewitness to the fighting on Iwo Jima, the first man back from that island, we take you to CBS Washington, Tris Coffin reporting.
The first man back from the great battle at Iwo Jima is sitting before the CBS microphone in the Navy Department in Washington. He is Lieutenant Commander John W. McClain, who is in charge of naval photographers at Iwo Jima. The commander has been flying 3 days and has spent 4 days and nights without sleep. He's still dressed in his tan fatigue uniform with an old leather jacket. Commander, the American people have been deeply stirred by the great battle at Tokyo's front door. Suppose you tell us something about it.
Well, on D-Day, I was in a landing ship, an LCI. In pretty close range, it seemed too close at times. I saw the whole show from the Navy bombardment up until the time I left.
What was this Navy bombardment like?
I had a good seat for the show, and I can tell you I never saw such a bombardment in my life. I saw the landings in Africa and Normandy, and they can't compare with the concentration from the sea and carrier-based planes. It was hard to believe that any human being could be left alive on the island after that naval fire. It had its effect, too. When the first waves of Marines went ashore, the Japs were stunned. There was only meager fire from the enemy, and it was a magnificent sight, all the landing ships lined up along the beaches and out to sea, and the Marines pulling their way through the deep volcanic ash headed for the airfield in the middle of the island.
Can you tell us something about the island and the Jap defenses, Commander?
Well, if you'd set out to build an impregnable fortress, you couldn't do any better than copy Iwo Jima. Mount Suribachi at the southern tip of the island is a junior Gibraltar. It stands more than 500 feet high, and the sides are pocked with caves and hidden gun emplacements. This mountain commands the entire island. The southern end of the island is a mass of caves and ravines and underground pillboxes, and the beaches are volcanic sand. It impedes even walking and makes the movement of heavy equipment very difficult. The Jap guns had control of the entire beach area where our men had to land. From the landing ship, I could see great plumes of water spurt high in the air from Japanese fire coming from both directions. In the initial landings, the Marines took the edge of the beach. The Jap coastal guns had been knocked out by naval gunfire. The first three waves that went in were landing craft tanks that nosed right up to the beach. They were followed by Higgins boats. It was less than an hour after the naval bombardment ended that the Japs opened up with all their machine guns, mortars, and artillery. They'd recovered from their daze by then. Their guns from Mount Suribachi in the area to the south zeroed the beaches. Must have been hell on the beaches when that Jap fire began. And you'll remember the first waves met with little opposition. We could see the Marines digging in when the Japs opened up.
Did it take the Marines long to reform their lines and start the attack again, Commander?
No, they were stuck a few hundred yards inland until about noon. Then in the afternoon, they began to advance with tanks. We saw the tanks fan out and move up toward the high ground with the Marines following right behind them on foot. All the time, naval gunfire and airstrikes were giving them close support.
What kind of seas did you have for the invasion, Commander?
Well, the first day was swell. The seas were fairly calm. But the next day, the sky was ugly and overcast, and the waves began piling up. That, of course, made the job of landing supplies and reinforcements tough. After a day of fighting, the beaches were a picture of desolation. The litter and debris of war was all around, damaged landing ships, equipment, and weapons.
Commander, what kind of air support did the Marines get during the invasion?
Carrier planes were coming in all the time for strikes. There wasn't a moment when the air was free of planes. Dive bombers came right down on the deck. Rockets and bombs were smashing at the Japs. The noise of the planes and the shore fire was terrific.
Commander, how did you manage to get out of Iwo Jima?
Well, that's a story in itself. I went from the landing craft to a Navy PBM on D plus one. At the time we were in the PBM trying to get off, anti-aircraft batteries were firing at us. I couldn't see how we were going to get in the air, but the pilot calmly said, "We've got a little gadget here that'll get us off." It was jet propulsion. He pressed a red button and we shot 40 feet in the air. From there we flew to Saipan, Guam, and then home nonstop. I arrived here 4 hours ago.
Thank you, Commander McLean. I return you to CBS in New York.
This program has come to you from CBS World News. We now resume our scheduled program.